Welcome to Hype, episode 190. So close, but still so far.
We're from in 200. Assisted living, you know?
If we time it right, we'll hit 200 at San Diego Comic-Con.
You know what? That would be super exciting. That would be amazing. And we would be together for the milestone.
I know! Oh my God, I only just realized we have to make it happen.
Okay,
now.
We do have to make it. I don't know how we're going to make it happen.
I don't know.
Oh, wait, but maybe we can. Okay, 10 shows between now and then.
My head math tells me that this works out pretty well, almost through the week. So I might be totally wrong, but we can check that later.
All anyway, right. Well, we're going to try exciting. And make it happen now. I'm committed.
Oh my gosh. But anyway, we have some shows to look forward to until we get there. My name is Selena. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Hype. And I have Pam here with me this week.
Hello.
It's just episode 190, so who
I know.
Even cares?
who is she? I don't know her.
Anyway, we'll try to make it worth your while. Thank you so much for tuning back in. Last week, we had Shayna from Hypeable on, and we had a great time. But Pam is back now, which is also great. Before we get into the show, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. If you have anything you want to let us know about that's happening in pop culture, or if you have any feedback on stories we talked about or rebuttals or anything like that, you can send it in to us either via email, which is hype@hypeable.com, or you can send us a tweet, which is @hypeablehype. We do also have some other social media outlets, including Instagram @hypeablehype, Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and of course, well, it's not really social media, but we do also have Hypeable itself, which is hypable.com, which is where all the stories we talk about on the show are posted, and you can find more download information, subscriber information for Hype on there as well. Okay, so the first thing we do, as always, is how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Pam, tell me what you've been doing in fandom this week. It's not like there's too many people to choose from. I'm always like, who am I going to pick?
Let's see. Anybody from the class want to volunteer?
Yes.
I was off last week because I went to Bottle Rock. Now, I'm not big on music festivals. I feel like there was a time and a place in my life where I would have been like, yeah, let's go and sit out in 100 plus degree weather in the desert. That's not really for me anymore. As I get older, I realize this. Like, I want to be cool, but I don't know if I can hang anymore. But there are still a few smaller festivals that I think are like worth your time and money if you can make it out to those. And one of them is Bottle Rock, which takes place in Napa Valley, California. That is, of course, where all of the wine comes from, or most of it. And it's not very far away from San Francisco. It's about maybe an hour and a half-ish drive away. So it always happens during Memorial Day weekend, which for all of you international listeners is the last weekend of May. And it's really fun because it's not only music, but it's music, food, and wine. So it's a great place to get something good to eat. And it's a great place to listen to some really cool music. And they have a culinary stage where they bring, you know, celebrity chefs out, and they kind of do collaborations with the bigger musicians that are there and some of like the high profile sports athletes from the Bay Area. It's just like a really good time, and it's a really great venue. And they always like bring out a killer lineup. I feel like every year it gets a little bit bigger, and they're able to bring in some bigger artists. I've talked about it before. I went, I think, like 2 years ago, so I haven't been for a while, and decided to go again this year, and it was really great. I saw Bruno Mars there on Sunday, and he was amazing. Talk about the total package performer. And Halsey was there as well. I was really impressed by her stage presence. Bleachers, which is, of course, the solo project from Jack Antonoff, who was with Fun and is now like this high-profile producer, has worked with Taylor Swift and Lorde and a bunch of other artists. He was there, too. I was like completely like enamored over his set, and he was really great. And it's just also a really fun place to kind of check out some smaller bands as well, because there's like four stages simultaneously going. So you can kind of like check out the bigger acts that you know, but also maybe find something else that you'll be interested in as you're walking by. And we also did an interview while I was there with solo project called The Night Game, and that's going to be coming out very soon if you guys want to check that out. I'm working on editing it right now, but he is definitely a narrative-based storyteller in terms of lyrics, and also kind of like very pop, like 80s synth influenced in terms of sound. So we had some nice deep chats while I was there, and I'm excited to release that so that you guys can enjoy it and maybe kind of get to know him a little bit better and be introduced to his music through what he had to say about creating it and working in the industry.
That's really awesome. I'm so excited. It's been a while since we've done an interview, and it's always more fun to do interviews with people in person. So I'm really, really excited to listen to this one.
Yeah, hopefully it sounds like, okay, it's like I brought some lapel mics, which, like, for those of you guys that don't know, they're like the little clip-on ones that you see on interviews, like in TV and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool because, like, there's a little bit of background noise, but the voices are still fairly well isolated, I think. So it's kind of, like, a little bit more exciting because it sounds like we're all professional and cool and, like, on the scene. I mean, of course we are. We're very professional and cool.
Of course, every week. That happens, yes. And when we're not professional, we're sitting around at home consuming pop culture so we can talk about it with you guys. Look how we suffer.
Yay!
My recommendation this week is a little less exciting than Pam's, What Else Is New, which is that Throne of Glass, I'm still making my way through this book series. And I was just telling Pam before we started, and it's kind of funny because I don't love this series, but I just finished book 5 and they're like 600 pages long each. They're each like a little Goblet of Fire, not Order of the Phoenix, Goblet of Fire length books. So they're pretty hefty and I just keep reading them. I think it's good. I think this is a good series. It's Sarah J. Maas's Throne of Glass and Empire of Storms, which is the 5th one or the 6th one even. I don't even know. I just keep reading them, guys. I don't know what's going on. But at this point, like, mild spoiler alert, our hero is no longer called Selena. So that's a bummer. And she's, like, fighting for the future of the kingdom. And she has all her people around her. And there's a couple of characters, side characters, Lysandra and Manon, who are amazing. They are some of my favorite characters in fiction, actually, both of them. And so that's kind of a plus. That's one of the reasons why I keep reading. And I really enjoy them. I think there's something very frustrating about the romance part of this book, which is that, you know, it's kind of just like pairing everyone off. Like, it's very sort of heteronormative, which is like, it's fine, but it's also very boring and like unbelievable, the kind of loops that the author goes through to put people together and make their relationships seem way more epic than they are. And particularly the main romance, I'm not into it at all. I think it is preposterous, and I'm not a huge fan of either of those characters even. But there are so many good elements and interesting elements to it. It's really exciting. The use of magic and stuff, the world building is incredible. So I think just for that, I am still really sort of unable to quit. I don't know how to quit it. So I'm still reading. And yeah, I'm moving on to book whatever the hell book I'm on now next. So I will continue to check in if anyone's a Throne of Glass. You know what is the funny thing is, this should tell you something, that every time I say on Twitter I'm reading the Throne of Glass series, someone like will inevitably go, "Oh, have you read her other series?
A Court of Thorn and Roses."
Yeah.
Apparently, this is the good one.
This is the apparently
Akatar. I know this one.
Wait, everyone knows apparently that's the good one, and everyone's like, "Oh, well, okay, here's the one you should have been reading all this time." And like, so that kind of bums me out. So I guess I'll read that one after. I guess I have nothing better to read than Sarah J. Maas, apparently. But it's good. She's a good author.
She's very trendy, like, right now.
Yeah. It's true. And yeah. And she's good. She really, really is good. And maybe I'll like the other one better because the characters are different. So
I hear it's a little bit more grown up. Like, it's categorized as young adult, but it's actually more like adult fantasy, which is kind of cool. But I just wish, like, I have learned about myself that, like, as I get older, that I can't really read books that are high fantasy, like world building, which is weird. Like, it's hard for me to get through that detail. Yeah, but it I love it.
How it's read.
Exactly. Yeah. But I love it on like TV shows and movies and stuff. But somewhere along the way, it just like it's been hard for me to get into that. So I know that Throne of Glass is not for me, but I am kind of interested in A Court of Thorns and Roses. So maybe we should like read it together and maybe see what happens.
It is like I feel like the world building is easier to get through because it is kind of a soapy story, you know, like with all the romance and stuff, you know, and family drama. But yeah, I'm excited to read the other series. I feel like that would be a good book club for us.
I think so too.
Before we move on, I just wanted to quickly ask you, because we haven't actually talked about this at all. Have you seen Solo?
Yes, I have. I've been gone like not a very long time, but also like a little
it
bit.
It feels like ages.
Yeah. Have you seen Solo?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Homework for you, and then we can discuss.
Okay, but did you have any like initial reactions or?
What do I want to say about Solo? I think that like they did a good job with what they had, but it's not my favorite Star Wars movie. It was enjoyable, but I think that like, but if I'm being honest, like there were like maybe one or two points where I kind of felt like it dragged a little bit pacing wise for me, but it was fun to watch, and I really enjoyed like a lot of like the Easter eggs and nods to other Star Wars movies, and some of like the relationship introductions were really cool because we'd never seen those before, but definitely not my favorite.
Okay, good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Pam's 15-second review. Here you go.
There you go. But I do want to, I feel like we can have a better discussion once we've both seen it. And so hopefully we'll be able to do that for you guys soon.
Hopefully. All right, so moving on to the news now. The first story in the doc, it's J.K. Rowling. Yay! We like to start with J.K. Rowling news, particularly when it's stuff that we are excited about. So this one is a good one. J.K. Rowling has revealed in a really funny way, actually, an old school way. She didn't tweet. She didn't give an interview. She didn't send an owl. She posted on her website that she's working on a new book, and it is a children's book. Oh my god! Do you think it's the political fairy tale for kids that she
this is like her time traveling mermaid?
Oh, this is her mermaid story.
This is her No. I was making a bad joke. Like, you
know, Stephanie Meyer.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. I was like, no, please, like, let's clarify that. Yeah, this is. I hope it's her political children's story.
Unless she actually meant, what's that one? Tale of the Three Brothers. Like that one, and it's been like in front of our noses all along, then I feel like it's really funny whatever happened. That was the one she wrote on a dress or something like that, and then it got auctioned off. So I guess it's not that one.
That's right. I forgot it's about that.
Yeah.
This is just silly, like, oh, Joe, you so funny. Like, I feel like she does this all the time. She's like, I wrote this, like, on an index card, and, like, nobody can have it. And then we have to wait for somebody to be kind and share with the rest of us.
You might say funny is one word to describe
I'm laughing through my tears.
Yes, it's hilarious. Anyway, I'm excited for this one, and hopefully we'll get to read it too. I'm a little less excited now. I'm mostly just worried. But yeah, it'll be really fun. She said, after Fantastic Beasts 3, I'll be writing another book for children. I've been playing with the non-Wizarding World story for about 6 years. Oh, it could be the fairy tale. So it's about time I get it down on paper. It's a clue, because last time she got it down on a dress.
Oh, thanks the Lord. Something that'll last a little bit longer than fabric and ink.
Yes, we're getting it on paper, guys. Whew. Anyway, so this is cool. I mean, when she says a children's book, obviously it could be like, quote unquote, a children's book like Harry Potter was, or it could actually be like a picture book or something. Like, we don't actually know, but it is cool. It is really exciting. I feel like J.K. Rowling, not counting Fantastic Beasts, I feel like she's one of the rare fantasy authors that don't stay in that genre. You know, I feel like the other big ones, we were just talking about Sarah J. Maas or like Stephanie Meyer, or what me and Shayna talked about last week, the one who wrote the Divergent series. And they're all sort of, they put out a series and it's really good. And then they put out something else and the fan base will read that, you know? And with J.K. Rowling, I think, obviously a lot of people love the Cormoran Strike series, but they are appeal fundamentally to a different audience than Harry Potter does. And Casual Vacancy, the book that shall not be named, was awful. At least it was incredibly depressing. So, like, I hope nobody reads that, because I did and I regret it. It's one of the only books that I've read that I've actually regretted reading. So it's, what I'm trying to say is that I'm really excited to see if she is actually going to sort of play with some similar story themes as Harry Potter, or if she's still going to be sort of in the, like, very strictly non-magical, non-fantasy, more or less realistic territory. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it would be very interesting for her to blend kind of both of those together, because, you know, she's kind of played in the real and in the fantastical world. I think there's something like, especially like with children's books, that's something like a little bit more magical, obviously about like staying in fantasy. But it would be kind of fun to see her play with something a little bit different for that target audience. So,
yeah. Yeah. And like, obviously a children's book doesn't need to have magic in it to be good. Yeah. I think actually the books that sort of inspired Harry Potter were those like set at boarding school, like, I don't know any of the titles in English, but you know, like those books that are boarding schools, the British books, and The Five, you know, she was very inspired by The Five. And that didn't have any magic, and that was beautiful. And Anne of Green Gables and all those kind of things. Like, maybe she's writing something like that. That would be nice.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And we're going to get to another beloved children's book series later on in the show, too, that was equally as good, even though it didn't have anything to do with magic. There's definitely a lot for her to play around with, and it would just be kind of, yeah, like, nice to see her flex that ability in a different genre.
Yeah.
But for the same audience.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Same. Well, here's something else that I'm incredibly excited about. Speaking of bookish news, The Hate U Give is, of course, in the process of being adapted for the big screen. And the movie hit a little bit of a snag, as we have discussed before on this show. They actually had to fire one of the stars because he uttered racial slurs, and they uncovered those videos after they had already wrapped filming. So the movie was kind of put on pause for a bit while they recasted, and they actually put KJ Apa in the role, who, of course, we all know from Riverdale, where he plays Archie. Super well cast, by the way, in my opinion. And you can read more about that over on Hypeable.com if you're interested. But despite having to go back and, you know, like reshoot a lot of the scenes with KJ in the role, it doesn't really sound like they've had to push this movie back. And we actually learned, I think about a week and a half ago now, that the film is actually set to hit theaters on October 19th, 2018. So we're going to get it at the beginning of this coming fall, which is super exciting. And I've talked so much about my love for Angie Thomas's book, The Hate U Give, and also about how excited I am for the movie adaptation as well. So I really hope that if you guys haven't read this book, you will consider picking it up, because I think it's such an important story and like so important, especially given the climate that we're living in the United States in general. But yeah, it's a super important story that definitely needs to be told. And I'm so excited to see it on the big screen and hopefully see it do well in the box office, because, you know, it's a great way to open people's eyes and shine a spotlight on this issue.
I know, for sure. I read it as well, and a couple of months ago, and it's such a good, like, hard, evocative book. And I think it, I always, you know, when you read it, as good as it is as a book, you also can feel how good of a movie it can be, you know, in the right hands. So I'm really excited.
And, totally.
I hope it's good.
Me too.
The next story, the final movie story. Yes, the final movie story of the week is exciting. Wonder Woman, the sequel, has a I was going to say a title. I feel like it did get a title, but maybe that was... Oh, yeah. No. Maybe it did. Hold on. Let's take it from the top. The Wonder Woman sequel has a... The time period in which it takes place has been revealed. We kind of already knew this, but it's been confirmed now that it's taking place in the 80s, which is obviously like kind of a funny coincidence because the upcoming Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s. So it's kind of funny that these like female-led superhero movies are like moving through the decades and very appropriate sort of decades, I feel like, for this type of girl power. So obviously the first Wonder Woman was set during World War I, and she is still wonderful. She's still, you know, the same old Diana all these years later. And Patty Jenkins's header actually says WW84, which, you know, either means that it takes place in 1984 or it means that it's called Wonder Woman 84. I think that's where I got the title thing confused. But I mean, it's really cool. It's really, it's going to be so interesting. Kristen Wiig is playing the villain, Cheetah. Chris Pine is apparently in this movie, which is so confusing considering what happened in the first one. And the 80s is just a fun period of time to set a film, I think. I really like when superhero movies like go period piece, you know, like Captain America and Wonder Woman and also Agent Carter, the TV show. I think that's a really great way to make these movies a little bit different and to use them to like explore different eras. So yeah, I'm hyped. I'm really excited.
I know. I think everybody was kind of waiting to see where this movie would be set, especially because Wonder Woman has like such a rich history. But I think that it's going to be really fun to see her kind of play around in this era. And we don't really, I don't think we've really seen a superhero movie set in this time either. So should be really fun.
There's not much to the story. I just thought it was
no. Good. Yeah, I mean, all Wonder Woman news is good Wonder Woman news. So I'm
and
here
it's good
for
to
it.
Have some good news.
I think like so too. No, I know. And you know, speaking of good news, with all good news comes bad news. This is not Wonder Woman related, but it will be kind of sad for fans of The Walking Dead. The series, the long-standing AMC zombie series, is about to lose two of its long-standing cast members. We learned that Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick Grimes on the show, is actually set to depart during the next year's ninth season, or this coming year's ninth season. So he's still going to be in season nine, but he won't be in like season nine fully. I think he's only set to appear in about like six episodes of the new season. And interestingly, as he exits, the show will be kind of refocusing its attention with Daryl Dixon as the lead, who is, of course, played by fan favorite Norman Reedus. So really, really sad to hear we'll be saying goodbye to Andrew Lincoln after, you know, 9 years of him being the fearless leader on that show. But kind of interesting to see how Daryl's going to fare as, you know, the forefront of this series. And he's not the only one that's leaving. Lauren Cohan is also set to depart the show, but this is maybe not super surprising. She was kind of involved in a lot of contract negotiations that weren't going very well and trying to get equal pay for her role of Maggie, which she definitely deserves because she's been doing a lot of crazy stuff over the past few seasons on there. And they did reach an agreement, but I'm assuming that it wasn't a very good agreement because she's also set to leave next season. So
yeah, it's when does it come a point when you pull so much of the stuffing out of the body that it stops becoming the thing it used to be, you know? Like, when can you change enough parts? That's a better, less gross analogy. Like, when can you change enough, like, enough parts on a car that it actually becomes a different car?
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of funny because I feel like The Walking Dead has slowly been doing this. Because if you look at the cast members that they have right now, a lot of them haven't been there longer than maybe, like, maybe three seasons, four seasons. Like, they haven't really, like, kept a lot of the original cast members. But Rick has always been, for better or worse, the heart and soul of this show. So it's a really big deal that Andrew Lincoln will very soon no longer be a part of this journey.
I think
that the fandom, like, as much as they love Daryl and also Norman as an extension, like, it's not the same as having Norman and Andrew on the series. Right.
And it's kind of like, you know, if I'm like trying to think of a similar, like, if like, why am I like blocking today? It's like terrible. I cannot think of a single suggestion. But like, you know, like on The Office when they wrote Michael Scott off. And it was like, yeah, you know, we like the other characters, but it's not, that's not the point. Like, there are characters, the main characters that like hold the glue together. Like, if they wrote Clark off of The Hundred, or when they wrote Elena off The Vampire Diaries, it's like, there's just some characters that you really can't remove them because they are like sort of part of the skeleton. And I think once they start, I know Lauren Cohen is a huge fan favorite as well, and her character is really loved, and she's going to be missed. But Andrew Lincoln is the star. I just feel like it's time to stop. Like, it really annoys me. You know, they have Fear the Walking Dead. They can make a new show. This, at this point, people were already sick of The Walking Dead before, and now without the cast, like, they're trying to morph it into a Daryl spinoff without actually changing the show itself. And I just think that's stupid.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be interesting. As somebody who has not given up on this show yet, I'm curious to... No. I mean, like, it's fine. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I will be curious to see how the show works, because Daryl and Rick are two completely different people. Mm-hmm. And while Daryl has had some very interesting episodes that have focused like solely on his journey and his past and his present and stuff like that, it completely changes the entire show to kind of like not have Rick there. And also because they've always, while Daryl has gone off on his own before, and Rick has existed without Daryl before, they've always come back together to work as a team. And I feel like they really, like, thrive best when they're together. Oh, God, I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. And it's almost, hard.
It's always also, like, when you have a dynamic like that, then, like, you need... Television needs to be dynamic. So, like, someone needs to be the Rick to Daryl's Daryl, right? So if Rick is gone, then is Daryl as the new lead also going to be the Rick? Because then he stops being the Daryl, if you know what I mean. Like, if he just becomes like a merger of those two characters, or if they try to put in a new character for him to square off against like that, then it's just going to feel like they changed one Rick for another one, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard. I don't know how they're going to balance that out. But... Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, and I don't know if, like, I'm not going to say I'm going to, like, drop the show, because, like, Rick's gone, but I mean, this past season was kind of hard for me to get through, because I found it a little slow and tedious, so if this is not the last season, and it's the same way, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep going with it, so, yeah. Stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting times.
Maybe we'll get some interesting stuff out of Comic-Con, though.
Maybe.
Because this is, like, the biggest shakeup the show has seen in a while, so.
Yeah. And that's a nice transition, because one thing we will not get at Comic-Con is a lot of scoop on The 100 Season 6. Because of some scheduling stuff that I'm going to be going into in a minute, the finale will not have aired by Comic-Con like it did last year. So last year we had like all kinds of fun speculation stuff, a teaser trailer, all kinds of things. This year, nuh-uh, because we still have like 3 episodes to go at that point. When you're listening to this, season 5, episode 6 aired yesterday, so I hope you watched it. Otherwise, do that now. And next week there's going to be a break. And then there's going to be one more break, we don't know when, before the finale, which airs on August 7th. Another thing that is changing is the time slot. So be aware of that. The 100 will begin air. It's currently airing Tuesdays at 9, 8 Central. It's being led in by The Flash. And starting July 10th, the series will actually begin airing at 8, 7 Central, taking over for The Flash to lead in a new drama called The Outpost. It's a sci-fi fantasy hybrid with a strong female lead, and it sounds so amazing. We're going to talk more about that in our bonus segment for patrons, so stay tuned for that. I don't want to get into it too much here, but it sounds incredible, and it sounds like a perfect fit for The 100, and I love that they are pairing these two high-concept sci-fi fantasy shows together on the same night, and neither of them is Arrowverse, so that's pretty incredible. And what is interesting about moving The 100, The 100 has never aired at 8. It's always aired at 9. You know, it's always been a late night show because of its content, because it's not a huge hitter like the Arrowverse shows. So moving it earlier, I don't think we can say too much about its like gritty content. I think we can still expect The 100 to be as gritty as ever, you know, regardless. First of all, the season's already done, so it's not like they can go back and change it, but also there isn't that much of a difference from 8 to 9. But it's going to be confusing for audiences. It's a little bit of a weird move. I'm glad we already have season 6 in the bag, but I kind of think it's interesting that they're using it as a lead-in, you know, because I know it's been on for 5 seasons and it's getting a 6th one, and it's no longer the underdog show that we like to claim that it is, but at the same time, it's never been a lead-in before. So I am kind of a little bit happy about this, even though it's confusing. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like the little show that could. This is a big deal.
It can.
The little show that can, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but you're right. For the longest time, it was like the underdog. But like Tuesdays at 8, that's a really good slot.
It is. It's like
they're putting a lot of, and rightly so, they're putting a lot of faith into the show. But like we've talked before about how like the past seasons of The 100 have like consistently been great, but this is the first season where it was like, whoa, like, this is impressive. Like, it's always been impressive, but this is like impressive to like a potential new audience. And the fact that it's going to be on at 8. Mm-hmm. Also, I saw, like, for all you baseball fans out there, apparently Justin Verlander, the famed pitcher, is a big fan of The 100. And I was like, I knew I liked you, Justin. It's good. But it's just so cool that, like, you know, I'm just so floored all the time by, like, how many people know about the show now and have heard about it, and, like, and I'm excited for more people to kind of join in on the fun. It's more fun for us, too, because we get to discuss it with more of you guys.
I know. It's so cool. So, yeah. So, I mean, confusing, but ultimately good news. I'm still kind of bummed about San Diego Comic-Con, but,
But they're still going to go, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't actually know yet, but
it's kind of like their bread and butter. I hope so too. And I think they will.
So
we have a little bit more TV news for you guys. A little few smaller stories to wrap things up today. The first is kind of fun if you were a fan of the Babysitter's Club books by Anne M. Martin, like I was growing up. Of course, we've seen adaptations of the Babysitter's Club before. There was a TV show in the early 90s, and there was also a made, well, it wasn't a made for TV movie. It was like an actual theatrically released movie. And now it looks like they're looking to bring the Babysitter's Club back in a television show, and this is kind of exciting because, you know, the books are very well beloved and, you know, captured the hearts of lots of people back in the 90s, but I feel like a lot of what Martin was doing in her books and you know, not only showing like a diverse group of girls that were all different, but all came together to like be, you know, leaders and entrepreneurs and have responsibilities. Like they also talked about like death and things that make us different and divorce and love and like diabetes. Like there's all this like really cool stuff in the books that's kind of a little progressive when you think that it happened in the 90s. And so it's definitely potential here to bring that into 2018 and kind of keep telling those stories for a 2018 market. And that's what it sounds like they're potentially trying to do with a television show. It hasn't been picked up yet, but it is being developed right now. So only time will tell if this actually ends up getting a series order by a network. But just some fun little news if you grew up on the Babysitter's Club, a little nostalgia piece for you.
Cool. I'd never watched the original. It's one of the most embarrassing movies that I've never watched.
I feel like the books would have been like up your alley as a kid. Like, not fantasy, but just, you know, it's all very girl power centric and stuff. And but I guess it's one of those things that didn't transfer over to Europe, maybe.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess it kind of did, but it wasn't one of the movies. I feel like obviously people could watch more movies than I did when I was growing up, but there was such limited access. Like, we didn't really have television. We did have television, but we didn't use it much. And I got to rent like one Blockbuster video a week, and I always chose DuckTales.
As you should. DuckTales is
as
great.
As I should do, right? The same, like, five DuckTales. And, like, you know, it's limited. And then The Parent Trap came out, and then that was all I wanted to watch for the next 5 years. So, you know, what are you going to do?
These are all very good choices. And It Takes Two, right? You were an It Takes Two fan.
Oh, my God, yes. Both of those. Oh, my God. I have never had... what do they call it?
The Sloppy Joe. Yeah. I don't think you're missing out, but
no,
like...
No, but it looks so good.
Well, I think I could make this dream a reality for you.
Oh my God. You would like literally make me so happy.
Should we do this at Comic-Con? Should we make Sloppy Joes? Okay. I'm going to look up a good recipe. We'll talk about this off air.
Oh my God. That'll be so fun. Patreon bonus video.
We're doing it. We're doing a Patreon bonus video for sure.
That's amazing. Okay.
Well, I don't know if this is as exciting as the Sloppy Joe
it's
gate
not.
2018. But we do have a little bit of Outlander news to round off this week's news. Outlander is, of course, not coming back till this fall, but we did get some really exciting casting announcement. Starz actually announced five new actors for season four. So joining the cast will be Caitlin O'Ryan, Natalie Simpson, Tim Downey, Simona Brown, and the name that everybody's super excited for, Billy Boyd, who is, of course, of Lord of the Rings fame. So that's really exciting. And he's actually going to be playing a pretty cool character if you're a Lord of the Rings fan and you want to know a little bit more about what he'll be doing on Outlander. He's going to be playing Gerald Forbes. And Gerald is a wealthy lawyer who resides in Cross Creek. And you can expect to see him share some poignant scenes with Jocasta Cameron, who is one of his prominent clients. So that's kind of cool. And then a lot of these other characters will be meeting some of them in Jamie and Claire's daughter's time. So in the future, Simona Brown and Caitlin O'Reilly are going to be playing Gail and Lizzie. And they're both friends of Brianna, who is Jamie and Claire's daughter. So that's kind of cool. And then Tim Downey's going to be playing the role of Governor William Tyrone. And he is a former British officer whose important family connections help him become governor. So lots of fun little Outlander tidbits coming out. And next season starts sometime in November, so keep an eye out, because I'm sure we're going to be getting more details as we get closer and closer to that release date.
It's so fun. Outlander is like collecting famous Scottish people, which I think is really cool.
It's like, and the Harry Potter of
It is, of Scotland. Mm-hmm. But Billy Boyd, I mean, we were just talking before the show that he hasn't really done much, that not that I know of anyway. So it's going to be fun to see him and stuff. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's great. I feel like we get a little bit more of Dominic Monaghan when we talk about the Percy and Pippin, but it's going to be fun to see him back kind of semi-regularly on TV. So,
yeah, cool. All right, so that brings us to the end of the news. That was a good roundup of stories. We're going to be moving into TV show of the week now. I guess I'll go first to keep the alternating going. And I want to talk about my new favorite show that I started watching a week ago and have been binging. I should probably say what it is. It's Superstore, which is, if you don't know Superstore, I didn't, except there were some people on my Twitter feed shipping the main ship. So that's like the only context I had for it. But it's a workplace comedy. I think I just described it to someone as the only non-Mike Shore comedy that feels like a Mike Shore comedy. So it's very much in the vein of The Office, Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's like, and the characters, I would say, are quite similar. especially at first. Like you have, you know, your female Dwight, you have your Jim and Pam, you have your Leslie Knope slash Michael Scott, you have kind of your Jake Peralta, kind of, you know, those characters. But I kept watching, you know, because that's what I tend to do. And it's comedies that I feel like, all right, you know, it's okay, it's fine. I need something, you know, when you just need a show to binge that's like comfortable for your eyes. This is one of those shows. And then as I kept watching, I really, like, it, basically, I started to feel the same way as I feel about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, I just love this show now. I love the characters. I love their little workplace family. They all work, as the title indicates, in a superstore. And there's, like, a wacky boss. There are wacky employees. There is a romance at the center of it. It's actually America Ferreira, I believe it, her name is, who obviously of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants fame. We all love her. And she's one of the leads on it. And there's a male actor. I believe his name is Ben Feldman. He's very attractive. I haven't seen him in anything else, but I will after this. And they're like in a will they, won't they kind of relationship or dynamic. And I love them. Oh my God. I'm not like a massive shipper. Like if anyone like knows me, they know I ship casually, but these, oh my God, I'm so into it. Like, and it's so well done. I don't remember the last time I saw, I guess it's more of a slow burn because it's like, it's pretty obvious that they're the main relationship, but I don't remember the last time I saw one that was so satisfying in its buildup, you know, even though obviously I've watched all three seasons now, so I'm all caught up and it's like stuff has happened, but I feel like the way they pace it and the way they go back and forth and move like one step forward, two steps back is really nice. And it doesn't feel stale and it doesn't really feel forced. Like the problems they have feel organic. And so I love that and I ship it so much. And I also just, there are some other characters in the show, Garrett's and Dina, who was so annoying and like a caricature at first. She's become my absolute favorite. I love her. I love, God, I forget all their names now. But yeah, so anyway, so I, Superstore, which just totally blew me away. It's the perfect show to binge if you're feeling down. It's very diverse, you know, it's very fun. It's, if you've ever worked retail, you will love it, even though it's incredibly unrealistic. They take breaks all the time. They just leave work. They're like, I can't be here anymore. And then they just walk out the store. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. But it doesn't matter because it's fun. And there's this wave of comedies right now that are just empowering and feel good. And I love them. You know, I think we need them so much. And I'm so happy I found Superstore. I can only recommend it. I don't know if you've seen it. I didn't even let you talk for
those minutes. I've seen a few episodes of this, and it's always on my to binge list. But yeah, the episodes that I've seen, like even as standalones, the cast has great chemistry, and they're so funny. I watched the Halloween episode because America Ferreira was dressed up as Selena, like the Selena of my childhood. Yes. And it just made me so happy because she was definitely one of my heroes growing up. And it's just perfect. And America Ferreira is so great, too. Just as like a person and also as a talent. And
she's wonderful in this show, too. Like, I think you'd really like it. But I will also say that like it definitely, I think it works as a binge show. Like, I'm not sure I would watch it week to week. Like, obviously now I have to, because otherwise I'll be spoiled. But just having lots of episodes to go through was, I think, just a really nice experience. Because it's very low-key. Like, not a lot of stuff actually happens in the show. But that's okay, because that's part of the experience. I think a lot of, they're really good at avoiding stereotypes. Like, even though at first it seems like everyone is like very one-dimensional stereotype, they are actually very good at avoiding putting people into boxes, which is really impressive. And everyone's like allowed to be human, which is nice and kind of not usually the case for TV shows like this. So I think it is just a wonderful binge. And even though, as you guys all know, like, I don't really laugh at comedies, you know, I don't sit there and laugh. I just sit there and watch. But occasionally it will make me chuckle. I will say I have A laugh has been forced out of me against my will a couple of times. So I guess it's hilarious.
I also wanted to say very quickly, because you are a newfound Ben Feldman fan.
Oh my God, yes.
I have seen him in one other thing before that I really enjoyed, which is a show called Drop Dead Diva. And it sounds okay. So ridiculous, but it's also kind of a comedy. And basically what happens is, like, it starts off with like a model and she's like super shallow and vapid. And then she gets killed in a car crash and she gets reincarnated as a plus size lawyer who's like super smart and completely the opposite of her. But since she's so shallow, all she really cares about at the beginning is like how she looks and stuff like that, because she's not, you know, a beautiful person, TM, anymore. So she, in order to like reach heaven, she has to figure out the meaning of inner beauty. And Ben Feldman actually plays her angel, Fred, and he's kind of there to like advise her. But the show's like super cute, and it stars Brooke Elliott, Margaret Cho, Kate Levering, April Bowlby, who's like really great in it, and also like obviously Ben Feldman, he's really great in it too. So yeah,
he must have been so young at the time. It's from the 90s, or was that the movie?
Maybe it was the, well, it started in 2000, I think it went to 2009. I'm looking it up on IMDb right now. Okay. 2009 to 2014, so it's six seasons long, and I actually never finished the series because I was watching it on Netflix and then they took it off, but I think they just put it back on there. So okay. I've only seen the first three seasons, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're interested. It's got a really cool cast and it's really fun. And yeah, it's kind of one of those shows that should be bad, but it ends up being like good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
interesting. Mm-hmm. I might consider checking that
out.
Yeah. He's very charming. He serves some looks. Like, you
he
know,
does
like
serve
when you
some looks.
Like, you just, you get into like characters, I feel like, based on how they look on other characters. You know, and he's like, hello. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Half of the rom-com is all about the stare, like how the people stare. Look at, well, other people.
There was a tweet thread or an article or something about that recently, wasn't there? I feel like I saw that on Twitter.
Probably.
Like how it's all about the way
the
they
look.
Look at each other. Yeah, the look. Oh my gosh.
It sells it. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my rec.
Well, my TV show of the week is The Bold Type, which will probably be my TV show of the week for a very long time. The Bold Type is coming back next week on June 12th to Freeform. And I'm so excited for everybody to get back into the lives of our favorite ladies at Scarlet Magazine. I have seen the first two episodes, and it's, I know we talked a little bit about like the shakeup behind the scenes with the new showrunner and things like that, but it feels super organic still, and they're just doing the same of everything that we love, being super aware, super current with the topics that they're tackling, everything from, you know, feminism to identity to trying to figure out your place in the world. It's all there still, and I'm just so excited to keep watching this show with you guys. It's so, so good. And if you have Hulu, I just saw on Twitter that you can watch the first hour of the two-part season premiere right now on Hulu. So,
okay,
yeah, if you're able to do that, check it out.
I'm so excited. The Bold Type is one of the ones that I just, like, it's so feel good.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
It's so good. So,
it's like 13 going on 30, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah. And like Jane is like now at Insight, you know, so she's no longer under Jacqueline's watchful eye. And Sutton is still kind of trying to figure out the workplace romance drama. And Kate is just being Kate and also kind of, you know, dealing with her newfound identity as like, you know, being in this relationship with Adina that she like chased off at the end of last season, and it just all works really well. And it's building off of the stories that kind of captured our hearts last summer. And I'm just so excited to see where all these characters go. I think like last time we talked about this, we both came to the conclusion that Jane's story arc was the one we were maybe like most invested in. But coming back into season two and seeing where they're like kind of where they're going with all of these characters from the get-go, I'm like equally invested in all three of the ladies, which is something that I didn't feel last season. Yeah, I think that like Sutton for me was like not as exciting, but like,
yeah, me too.
But this season, just like what they are doing with her character in the first two episodes back is very interesting to me. And yeah, I'm more invested in her character than I was before, but like equally invested in all three of their journeys. And I'm so excited for everybody to tune in. So yeah, June 12th is the big day.
Yeah, cool. Well, I will definitely go and see if I can locate those screeners because I was looking for them the other day and I was like, I guess they're not on there.
Yeah, we had this whole discussion about navigating.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll talk more about the bull type with you guys as the premiere comes up. So
for sure.
Yay. Yeah.
Yay. Cool. All right. So those were our recommendations. We would love to get your recommendations or if you have any thoughts on either of those shows. Moving into listener feedback, we have just a couple of tweets and emails this week. So if you want to get the first tweet.
Ooh, this is like a tongue twister because this is from Shauna. But yes. She starts off saying, hi, Shayna. I thought Selena and said I was the guest host on the show for a minute there. You were a great host. Stay on and have three awesome ladies. I hope we get Shayna back, actually, because I would like to chat with her, too. So somewhere down the line, you never know.
She was so cool. Mm-hmm. I loved having her on the show. Kim says, I know I'm a bit behind, but am I seeing correctly that the Merlin rewatch episodes jump from episodes 2 and 3 to episode 5 commentary? No episode 4 discussion? Pam?
We did this on purpose.
Yes.
Yes, because...
We hate episode 4.
No, because we wanted to do the commentary for the Patreon, which is where she saw it. But episode 4 and 5 are meant to be a joint deep dive discussion on our feed, and we just haven't gotten around to scheduling this. So we are going to discuss the Poison Chalice, don't worry, because it's a great episode.
It is a great. I was just kidding. I don't hate it. I love it.
Yeah.
That was just how the scheduling's been working out. So our Merlin rewatch is going to be a slow process, but we are going to do it soon, I hope. We'll figure it out. It's on our priority list. We have two emails as well, and I'll just get the first one from Rachel. She said, I watched the first season of The 100 with you last year, but I didn't watch the rest. I've remained spoiler-free by fast-forwarding every week while you talk about it. Oops, I hope that worked out for you. The main reason I stopped watching was Murphy. I love the concept of the show and most of the female characters, but I couldn't stand Murphy. I don't like watching super dark shows, and he seemed like a very dark character. I kept thinking maybe if he left the show and I'd start watching again. I listened to Selena talk about her interview with Richard Harmon, and I thought, oh man, this character is still around in season 5. Anyway, I clicked on the Walker Stalker interview with him and thought what he said about his character was interesting. They actually turned his character around a bit. Not sure that's possible, but I'm now debating starting the show again. Thanks for the great podcast every week. I love listening and think it's a great how you respond to all your tweets and emails. Keep the episodes coming and I'll keep listening. Thank you so much for that email, Rachel, and thank you for clicking on the interview, even though you don't like the character. You know, I mean, aside from the fact that The 100, there's a lot of other reasons besides Murphy to watch, you know, like it's not the Murphy show by any stretch. And I think if you liked the first season, I think you will really enjoy the rest of the show. It's so good. But I will say about Murphy that one of the most impressive things The 100 does is it actually makes you like Murphy. And I promise you that you will like Murphy. And I can't explain it either because you're right. In season 1, he is awful. He is irredeemable. He is the worst. And yet...
Also...
Go on.
My hatred of Murphy is very well documented in our specials. He's my favorite character probably now.
He is, like, it's so funny. My
brother, how does that happen?
Right. Well, I don't know. I can't. It's magic. Like, literally, it's one of the things The 100 should be commended for more than anything is making people like Murphy. By season 5, he's, like, everyone's favorite. And it's not like, you're not like, oh, I hate that they made me like this character. Because it's not about, like, forgetting what he did. It's not about, like, redeeming him. It's not cheesy. It's just, he's just a good character.
It just works, you know? Yeah. And it's not one of those characters that you feel like you need to begrudgingly appreciate a little bit because they move the plot along. Like, it's not like an Umbridge situation, but yeah, it's that character is one of the most well-written characters on television. Yeah. And the nuances and the subtleties in which Richard Harmon has been able to play him and build that up through what he's given in the script is like, it's really impressive. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things about the 100 that I think is kind of challenging, but also really important and kind of unique to that show, is that you will genuinely change your opinion on characters from season to season. You know, it's not just Murphy. The way that you feel, like fundamentally feel about these characters as they move through the story and make different choices, will change so much. And I think sometimes in fandom, like, it's very static when you talk about a show. It's, you feel the way you feel about it in that moment. And you sort of, like Bellamy, for example, Bellamy goes through so much through the show. And there are points when you might be really mad at him or not like the character. And there are times when you will absolutely love the character. Same for Octavia, same for Clark, same for Abby, you know. But I think when you talk about it in fandom, it's like, oh, well, if you like Bellamy, then you have to always have liked Bellamy, or else you are the enemy of fandom. Either you are with the Bellamy fandom or you are the enemy of the Bellamy fandom, as Octavia would say. But I think that's part of the watching of the show is allowing yourself to change your mind, you know, and allowing yourself, like, you can hold on to your opinion as long as you possibly can. But eventually, you know, you will have to expand, and sort of the show forces you to see characters as so many, like, so multidimensional. And I think that is really masterfully done. So I hope that you will give it another shot and see how you feel about Murphy after season two, because... yeah, I would love to hear what you thought as you went along. So yeah, thank you again for your email.
We have one more email here from Ning, who says, "Hello, Pam and Selena. I've been wanting to write in about Crazy Rich Asians since you talked about it a few weeks back, but life, you know? Anyway, yes. I love that both of you, and in general, the reaction to these trailers have been positive, and that people are psyched up about a major Hollywood movie with an Asian cast. And I definitely agree that it's wonderful to see more diversity. However, just to provide an alternate view, here in Singapore, where I live and where this movie is set and filmed, there has been a number of negative reactions about diversity. It's mainly centered around how the movie portrays a minority community of very rich Chinese in Singapore and doesn't reflect the diversity, the different races of people, or reflect what life is like here. I'm not expressing it as eloquently as the reactions I've been reading, and I would attach an article, but I can't seem to find one. All this just to say, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but thought you might appreciate this alternate view. Personally, I was never very interested in the book or movie, maybe because it is not necessarily a new story or perspective to me, but maybe I'll check out the movie when it comes out. Didn't mean to go on and on. Love you girls, and thanks for the show. Love, Ning." I really appreciate this email, because I feel like not long ago I saw somebody tweeting about this, and yeah, I think that that's something that we forget, but is super important to point out, that this is not only like from an economic standpoint, but also just, you know, in terms of like a very Hollywood like portrayal of Asian actors and actresses. Like, it's all definitely like one type of girl, one type of guy, when, you know, as an ethnicity, there's so much diversity in the Asian culture. So that's definitely important to remember as well.
Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention, because we wouldn't have known that otherwise. Yeah. All right. So those were our emails and tweets for this week. We would love to hear from the rest of you. And yeah, everyone who's listening, you can send us a tweet at HyperbleHype, and you can email us hype@hyperbole.com. You can also check out our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/hypepodcast, where if you donate $2 a month, you get a weekly bonus segment, as well as a monthly video from each of us, and other special features, like the Merlin commentary that Kim brought up, and a giveaway that we are planning. Yes, I think it's okay to say, because we are officially planning.
I feel like we've talked about it too on the show. We want to do some kind of like Comic-Con related giveaway. So if you're a patron, stay tuned for details on that.
Yeah, exciting. Thank you so much to everyone who is supporting us on Patreon. This week's bonus segment is going to be a more in-depth discussion about some of the new CW shows that are premiering in the 2018-2019 season. Because, like, there's so much good stuff in the CW, and we, me and Pam, are both really into the programming over there. And it's really interesting to see what happens on the CW in general. So we are going to be talking about that on the bonus segment, which Patreon subscribers can access on patreon.com/hypepodcast. All right, until next week, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful first week of June. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, guys.
Bye.